ॐ भद्रं कर्णे विश्वनियाम देवाः भद्रं पश्येमाक्षभिर्यजत्राः स्थिरैरङ्गैस्तुष्टुवागुंसस्तनूभिः यशेम देवहितं यदायुः स्वस्ति न इन्द्रो वृत्तश्रवाः स्वस्ति नः पूषा विश्ववेदाः स्वस्ति नः सार्षो अरिष्टनेमिः स्वस्ति नो बृहस्पतिर्दधातु ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। We're in verse 5 still. We touched on it last week, but I'm going to finish it today. No, we didn't. I'm positive that we didn't. Satyena labhyasta prasahyesha atma. Satyena labhyasta prasahyesha atma. Samyak jnanena brahmacharyena nityam. Samyak jnanena brahmacharyena nityam. Antasharire jyotirmayo hi shubhrah. Antasharire jyotirmayo hi shubhrah. Yam pashyanti yatyakshena doshah. Yam pashyanti yatyakshena doshah. Satyena labhyah tapasa hi eshah atma. Samyak jnanena brahmacharyena nityam. Antas sharire jyotir mayaha ishubraha yam pashyanti yatyaha kshina doshaha. Eshaha atma, indeed this atma, satyena labhyaha, is attained by satyam. It's gained. This self is gained by satyam, by telling the truth. Okay? Nityam satyam, nityam satyena, by always telling the truth. Okay? By the truth, literally satya is truth, by the truth. But it means by telling the truth, by being honest, by honor, through honesty, through truthfulness. Okay. By tapas. Tapas really means religious austerity. So tapasa, just like satyena is instrumental singular, nityam at the end of the second sentence, nityam is an adverb, adverbial. Right? Nityam as an adjective can just mean eternal or timeless as a noun, timeless. But if it's put in the accusative singular, or sometimes in the instrumental singular, or ablative singular, it can be used adverbially. So here it's adverbial, nityam, always. Always. Okay? So, satyena nityam, by always being truthful. Tapasa nityam, by always practicing. We'll see what Swamiji has said about tapas and what Shankara has said about tapas. Right now we'll just take it as religious austerities. Okay? Instrumental singular. Brahmacharyena. By Brahmacharya, it means through celibacy, but also through controlling the passions, also through studying and living with the teacher, being in the vicinity of the teacher, living with the teacher. So I'll talk about that also. So again, instrumental. And then what we looked at last week, samyak jnanena, by clear knowledge through shravana, manana, and nididhyasana. So all of these are instrumental. So this atma, labhyaha, is gained by what? So now we're looking at what are the sadhanas? What are the sadhanas for gaining this self? And since this self is yourself, the sadhanas are going to be have to be looked at a little differently, because the Atma is not an object out here to be attained or gained. So the Atma is already myself. So how am I going to gain this Atma that is already myself? Well, the primary sadhana, because I already am the self that I need to gain, the primary sadhana is going to be jnanam, samyak jnanam, clarity of knowledge through shravana, manana, and nididhyasana. Because if you already are the self that you need to gain, the problem is not going to be one of attainment or achievement, right, or reaching. It's going to be a problem of ignorance. So the primary problem in terms of the attainment of the Atma is the ajnanam of the Atma, ignorance of the Atma. And so what is going to be the primary means for removing ignorance is jnanam, right? Jnanam, samyak jnanam, clarity through clarity of knowledge, shravana, manana, nididhyasana. Shravana is exposure to the pramana, to the teaching methodology. Manana is the tussling with it, to removing the doubts, all of the logic, all of the understanding, so that your mind really understands what it sees at the time of teaching. And nididhyasana is contemplation upon what you've seen at the time of teaching, so that the mind has a chance to own it up, to be with it, to recognize it, the reality of it, to sit with the actual reality of myself as myself as Brahman, as myself as Satchitananda, the pure conscious being that I am, who is the truth of all of this. Myself as Ishwara, myself as the whole, and what all of that means. So through nididhyasana, I sit, and my mind absorbs, sits in that reality. Where with manana, I'm answering, and my mind is questioning what I see at the time of teaching, to make sure that I understand it, to understand it clearly, to answer any doubts that are there. So that's the samyak jnana, that's the primary sadhana, right? For understanding, I am the whole, right? I am Ishwara. I am Ishwara means that my being is the truth of all that I experience, of this infinite creation. My being is the self of all of this, is the truth of all of this. So that nishta, that recognition, the recognition of that is brought about by knowledge. But, so this recognition, this is the primary sadhana, right? It's the primary sadhana for gaining myself, is jnanam. But then the secondary sadhana, what we call upaya nishta, because what is it that has to gain this knowledge? Right? Atma doesn't need this knowledge. I am the whole is the reality. Right? It's an already given reality. So for the Atma, there is no problem at all. So who is the problem? Right? It's going to be the antakarana. It's going to be this mind. It's this mind that is suffering from the ignorance. Atma is not suffering from ignorance. Atma, just like the sun illumines all the clouds, Atma illumines the ignorance. It illumines the knowledge, it illumines the ignorance. It's the truth of. It's as much the truth of ignorance as it's the truth of knowledge. Because if I am the whole, right? If my being, the conscious being that I am, is the whole and is changeless, and is all the ultimate subject, you know, the very being of all experience, then I am the being, I am the self of the ajnanam as well as the self of knowledge. Right? So just like the sun illumines the earth when the skies are completely cloudless, you know, and the sun is just beaming, illumining the earth, everything is shining and warm. The same sun is beaming and illumining the dark rain clouds. From the standpoint of the sun, everything is fine. So the sun lights up the clouds, it lights up the clear sky, it lights up the world. And so I light up my knowledge, I light up the ignorance, I light up all experience and the very being of all experience, including ajnanam. So from the standpoint of the Atma, there's no problem. The one who feels bound and the one who feels free, right, is the antakarana, is the mind. Right? It's the mind that has the problem. And so this mind is the one that needs to gain knowledge. And so since this mind needs to gain knowledge, it needs to have a certain disposition or certain qualifications that make it available for knowledge. This is true of any kind of knowledge, but it's especially true in terms of atma-jnanam, in terms of self-knowledge. But just think about it. In terms of in gaining of any relative knowledge, your mind requires certain qualifications. I would say one major qualification for the mind to gain knowledge of something is that it be interested. You know, that it be interested in the knowledge that's being presented. Because if it's not interested, it's very difficult to make that mind be available. Right? Sometimes Swamiji, in fact, in terms of self-knowledge, gaining self-knowledge for himself as a teacher, teaching so many thousands of people, a lot of people who are householders and are very busy and engaged in their lives and have a lot of things to accomplish, and they take a little time out and come to a class. And he's joked, prided himself actually, on being able to tell enough stories and jokes with great humor to be able to capture, you know, the attention of the mind so that he could kind of slip this knowledge in. You know? Not only capture the attention, but create an attitude of mind, an attitude of a relaxed attitude, an attitude of good cheer, an attitude where you're kind of laughing at yourself and kind of in a jovial, relaxed mood, and at the same time very engaged in the story that he's telling. And so, in a sense, in the class, he'll make you into a dikari. He'll make you into a qualified student for that moment, and then put in the medicine. Though the medicine is very sweet, it's a very sweet medicine. But the mind has to be available. And then, say, again he'll joke, this knowledge can be delivered to this mind that has been made into a temporary adhikari. But then when that mind leaves and has to go back to the workplace, you know, or just walk out the door is often enough, you know, then that knowledge, it's as though it's being held in a paper, fire being held in a paper bag. You know, it just will kind of burn right through, you know, and take off on its own. It'll leave the mind, because the mind doesn't have the wherewithal or the disposition to be able to hold that knowledge. And so the adhikari, understanding, you know, what type of mind is necessary to be even available to achieve this knowledge. That's also dealt with in the Upanishads. Even remember when we did the Katha Upanishad with the story of Nachiketas, how Yama, Lord Yama, tried so valiantly to get rid of Nachiketas by offering him so many enticements. Wouldn't you rather have this? Wouldn't you rather have wealth and overlordship be absolutely, you know, have a kingdom, have all the wealth that you could want, have all of your family go on and live in great health? No, I don't really want that, because it'll all come to an end eventually. So no, I don't want that. What about beautiful women? Wouldn't you like to have beautiful women, or they'll all get old and they'll burn out my senses in the meantime? No, I don't want that. This is really what I want. Well, Yama kept offering, because really, in order to gain this knowledge, your mind has to be available for it, you know, and not all the while thinking, well, when's this going to be over so that I can go have this? When's this going to be over so that I can go enjoy this? You know? Because then this knowledge becomes one of the objects to be gained in samsara. It becomes one of the things in samsara. And if it's one of the things in samsara, one of the objects to be enjoyed, right, just one of the things that will make me happy, I haven't understood the problem. I haven't understood the problem. The mumukshutvam's not there, right? Because I still believe that this is just one of the things that I can have in order to solve this problem of my unhappy existence. If I could tweak this and tweak this and tweak this and tweak this and have this knowledge too, then all would be well. Well, the problem's not understood. And so therefore the mind isn't going to be available in the way that it needs to be available. And so the adhikari, these qualifications, become a secondary sadhana. How to get the instrument ready. The instrument, the mind, that needs to gain this knowledge. Right? So this mind needs to be available for it. So what is required for that? What is it required? What are the sadhanas required to give the mind the stability that it needs to be present to this knowledge and then naturally inclined to sit with this knowledge, to do manana, to put in the effort to understand it? Right? I mean, just think about it, really. To come, to even for one class, think of what if you really think about what's involved, you come just even to one class. You have to get in the car. You have to come.
Get hit by a deer.
You have to get hit by a deer. Then you have to sit for an hour or 2 hours. Then all of this information, all of this unfoldment is coming. And then you have to want to understand what's being said. Your mind has to be interested in sitting with what's being said. Be compelled to understand what's being said, and then want to contemplate on what's being said. Well, that is weird, isn't it? When you think about it in the context, well, when you say weird, actually, not this, but I was being facetious, because actually, in terms of knowledge or learning something, in order for you to really learn something, this is how it is. You have to be there, you have to learn, you have to study, you have to engage yourself in it, you have to sit in it. So there has to be, you know, a commitment. It's called, in Sanskrit, it's called upadati. Right? When we go through these qualifications, the viveka, the vairagya, the viveka, viragya, and mumukshitvam give you, means that your mind is ready to receive this, to come to this knowledge. It gives you the adhikaritvam. Because you've recognized the problem, it's caused you to pull back from your pursuits. You don't have the same attitude toward your pursuits anymore. There's a certain vairagya that is there. Because you have recognized that the world cannot solve the problem. That's the viveka, the nityatvam. Everything is anitya, right? Everything is anitya. It means everything is non-eternal. So nothing can give you a lasting happiness. And so you've recognized that I want this to be happy. You've recognized, as we were talking Thursday, what I really want is to be happy. And these objects that I'm superimposing that happiness on are all finite. So they can't give me. They cannot give me that. It's not possible. And so I can't pursue them anymore with that same gusto of thinking that I can solve this problem and become whole and complete. You realize this is never going to work and I'm never going to be whole and complete doing what I'm doing. That becomes very, very clear. And that causes a vairagya. You don't have the same passion because you realize that these aren't giving you what you really want. Now, there's the key. They're not giving you what you really want, which means there's been a discernment about what you really do want. Okay? That's important. And so now, if you're in this situation that you have discerned what you really do want, which is to be a whole and complete being, to fulfill yourself as a human being, you know, to fulfill that fulfillment that is actually innate and inborn to all beings, you know, and you want that solution, you want to know what it is, and you realize that the world can't give it to you, then when Vedanta comes up as a pramana, you feel like you're a person. The example they give is a person with their hair on fire and there's the lake. How you would run to the lake. and jump in, you know, and revel in the water, right? You know, as a saving, you know, as a savior, in a sense. So that understanding is the type of understanding that's necessary, right, to want to learn this. There's a passion to learning it. And so then there's a commitment on the part of your mind to learn it. The upadati is that commitment. There's a commitment, but you can't have a commitment about something that you don't have any shraddha in. Or shraddha is another quality in the shamadhi shatka. The shraddha, you know. Shraddha means somehow you've recognized in yourself. You've recognized for some reason, it's considered, actually it's grace. When you're exposed to that teaching, this is it. This is what I want. You don't know if it's it or not. You don't know. But it sounds right. It feels right. It rings right to the degree that your mind is available to give it a try. Your mind says, yes, let me learn this. Let me learn this. And so it's available. Because the mind could also say, I really want this knowledge, that's not it. I really want to know, but not that. Then, if that takes place, then your mind's not available. So your mind has to be available to learn this knowledge in the form that it's given, being given, in the form of the Upanishads in this case, and in the form of the teacher who's giving it. Because I want this, but not from her. Or I want this, not from him. It has to be, I want this, and she'll do. It's fine. Right? So that the mind is available. So there's the shraddha and the upadati, but there's other qualities, the shama, dhamma, titiksha, samadhanam. These qualities, the shama and the dhamma, the titiksha, all of these qualities are qualities that speak to a certain equipoise of mind, shanti, a certain peace of mind, that now you've come to this teaching. So now you've come to this teaching, the mukshatvam is being satisfied, right? Because now there's a solution in sight. But now that solution is coming toward you in the form of knowledge. Right? Of understanding. And so now this mind that is sitting before the teacher needs a certain amount of shanti, of peace, stillness, so that it can be available for this knowledge to pour in. Because what if the knowledge is pouring, the knowledge is pouring out of the mouth of the teacher, that vision is pouring out of the mouth of the teacher, your body is here, your sense organs are here, you know, staring. staring. I go like that because Swamiji's done this, sometimes he'll hold it for a long time, you know, he'll sit, the sense organs are here, staring. Because the mind is out doing what it wants to be doing, right? The mind is out, gone. The mind is gone. And so even though the knowledge is there taking place, the mind isn't available, it isn't present, you know? It isn't present to capture it, right? So what should be happening in the best of all worlds is that the knowledge is coming through the teacher, and the teacher's mind is there, the student's mind is there, and there's really nothing happening except that knowledge. Teacher goes away, student goes away, all that's taking place is the vision of those words, right? So the mind is in samadhi, in a sense. Samadhi in that samadhanam. It's in that samadhanam, which means that it's just absorbed in the vision that's being given at that time. So that mind then has a certain freedom. It's not conflicted. It's not distracted. It's simply available. So now here, this is called the Upayanishtha. He's giving a few words here that speak to some of the strong, speak to this Upayanishtha. The first word he uses is satyam. Satyam means the truth. So what is it that what are the greatest sadhanas for giving the mind that stability and that peace that allows it to be available to this teaching? Satyena nityam. Always tell the truth. Now, what's meant by that? At least tell the truth to yourself. This Swamiji said a joke on that. It's in it, so I read it in the Bible. Now, what is the most, maybe considered one of the best sadhanas for antakarana shuddhi is satyam. It's called vaktapas. Satyam. Tell the truth. Whatever comes out of your mouth, let it be true. But also, let it be beneficial, hitam. But also, let it be priyam. Let it not be hurtful. Satyam, hitam, and priyam. It's the greatest tapas. It's considered the greatest tapas for antakarana shuddhi, for purity of mind. Because if you can do that, the ahimsa, which is also such a strong value in terms of purity of mind, that ahimsa is always taken care of because you don't take it upon yourself to be correcting or punishing others. You know, Bhagawan do that, or unless you're a parent or a teacher. So unless you're a parent or a teacher, let what you have to say be the truth and be useful and not hurtful. Why engage? Why engage in the world in such a way that you are being hurtful? Is it your place? Fine, usually it's not your place. Usually if you're being hurtful, it's because you yourself are very agitated. Right? And so that's a good reason to practice the vaktapas. Pull it back in then. Decide not to speak. Because you don't need to say everything that you think. What you say should be truthful, but you certainly don't need to say everything, right? We don't. Sometimes in the West, Swamiji sometimes has talked about this, right? In the West, we are so frank. You can't believe that we choose to say some of the honest things that we say. Why would you say that? Even if it's true, it's so hurtful. Why are you saying it? So let what you say be satyam, hitam, and priyam. You know, we might fail at that at times. It's a tremendous, it's a wonderful sadhana. Because when the mind can't just spill out through your mouth, you know, it can't just spill out because you're practicing this discipline, what happens is that you have to see what you would have said. It all comes in great relief. And there's a in stark relief when you see what you would have said. Otherwise, it just slips out, and you miss half of what you say. Half of what you say is useless anyway. For some of us who are in India, Swamiji used to make us do malam for several days at a time. Sometimes not speaking at all. It was such a wonderful sadhana. But at the beginning, because at the beginning you would see how much nonsense, useless chatter would be coming out of your mouth. And when you're doing Mounam and you've decided that you can't talk at all, then that's in a way easier, right, than doing Satyam, Hitam, and Priyam. It's easier because you can't say anything. But when that's the case, everything becomes very clear. And it helps the mind. It helps the mind to gain control of itself. And the mind, when it is practicing that satyam, Priyam, Hitam and Priyam. It feels dharmic. Mm-hmm. The way it's behaving in the world, it feels dharmic, which gives it a sense of peace and strength. And so that's interesting here. The Mundaka is giving two verses to this word, Satyam. How important it is. Then to say what is true, and then there's another way of looking at this too. It's called Arjavam. It's in the Bhagavad Gita, one of the qualities in the Bhagavad Gita. And that is to have consistency between what you think, what you say, and what you do. They shouldn't be, it shouldn't, Arjavam, it shouldn't be a crooked line. So there has to be consistency, you know. What you say you're going to do, you should do. What you think and what you say should be in alignment, you know. You don't have to say what you think, but you shouldn't say one thing. You shouldn't think one thing and say the opposite. That's very confusing. How are you going to remember? Now, you think one thing, you say the opposite. And then to this person, how are you going to remember? You see what I mean? It's like lying. That creates a lot of stress. And so now, think about this just in terms of your own inner peace. What if, though you don't say everything because you don't want to hurt another person, that there's nothing that you do that you need to hide? What if what you do, or what you feel, or what you think, you need to hide? Right? That's stressful. Right? The mind can't relax. The body can't relax. What if you're ashamed of what you do? Then you can't be open about what you do. What if you're ashamed of your life? When you think of it, it creates, if you really try to untangle this, because we all have little things that we're ashamed of, you know? But everything that you do or say that you're ashamed of means in that area you can't be open. So this is where Swamiji in his Bhasha on this says, you know, be honest to yourself. You can't, say if you're ashamed or worried or guilty or you don't like what you're doing or you don't like your relationship with somebody or something that you've done. It takes so much energy to hide it from others and to hide it from yourself. Your mind can't relax. And so this Vak Tapas and Arjavam, bringing all of these things into alignment, gives your mind so much freedom. You know, that's why even in some of these, 12 steps? You know, the 12-step program for addicts and people who are alcoholics and all this. One of the things is, you know, to just come clean, right? It's to come clean with everybody, to apologize to everybody that you've hurt, you know, to come clean to yourself for all of the things that you've done that you're ashamed of. So just to come clean. Why? Because the mind can rest. You're not running away. You're not running away from anybody or anything, and you're not running away from yourself. So it's a matter about being honest about what has happened and what has gone on within you. And honesty in terms of yourself and honesty in terms of the world. And so, when you understand the importance of these things, like that's why, you know, Swamiji's Value of Values, I love that book. You know? Because what it does is once you understand the importance of it, you gain a real value for doing that because it allows your mind to just rest, you know. And it's so simple. I mean, even something like cheating on your taxes. I would love to do that. All kinds of little places where I could just lie about this or that or the other thing. To save a little bit of money, you know, just to save a little bit of money. But if you do that, you know, if you do that, then your mind has to worry about being caught. And do you want to tell people that you cheat on your taxes? You want to get caught about cheating on your taxes? This is, I use this example because most people have to face it once a year. And we're facing it right now. Do you want to, you know? It's such a simple thing. But that becomes an example for everything. If you've ever done it before, which I have, I would never do it again because I just worried myself sick over it. Where's the shanti? I'd much rather give him $10,000, whatever it is, just so that I don't have to have that burden. I don't have to have that burden. Right? But it's true every step of the way. So to the degree that you can unwind your asatyams, you know, that you can unwind that and be yourself as you are and make amends, there's a depth of relaxation that takes place with that. You can do it toward others and you do it toward yourself also from being honest with your own shortcomings or your own needs or whatever they are. Even sometimes, you know, in this class, but even at school when I'm teaching the spiritual counseling, I even spend a lot of time even talking about prayer. Because we've been brought up, so many of us have been brought up to be even dishonest with God, you know, in terms of any type of a prayer life where you just ritualize it and tell God all the things that you're supposed to say, like, now I lay me down to sleep. Or, God bless mommy, daddy, and my brothers and sisters and my uncles. And bless all the poor people in Africa. And all of the poor people everywhere. And bless everybody that's sick. And take care of the whole world. And make everything, and bless the whole world. Amen. You know? But there's no real relationship there about how you're feeling or what your needs are or what you want or what you're worried about. It's all kind of formalized like that. Right? And so you can't even have a real relationship internally with the Lord. Because we weren't taught that way often. We weren't taught that way. Some of us were. You know, and some of you have figured it out along the way. But for so many, even the idea of really being bare and being open in front of Ishwara, to Ishwara, is something that it isn't done. Or even being open to yourself in front of, to your own self, the things that, how you really feel about things. What about when you really feel selfish or mean? Can you say, I really feel selfish or mean? Is it all right to feel selfish or mean? It's not that it's all right, because you would probably want to improve that situation. But can you say, you know, I was really selfish in that situation? Or, you know, I was really, I really wasn't very nice in that situation. I really wasn't. I should really take care of that. What should I do to make up for that? Can you go there and deal with it? You know, really, it's not very hard. It's just that sometimes we don't practice that. But that's all satyam. It's all satyam. And it's a huge relief. It's a huge relief to do it. Because it allows the mind to relax. And the person who has that satyam gets a huge reward, as we'll see in the next verse. They get the huge reward of shanti, you know. The shanti in the mind that reflects the atma. You know, so it's the royal road. In the next verse it says it's like the royal road, Devayanaha. It's the Panta Devayanaha. It's that satya, it's through that truth that the path of the gods opens up. The path of the gods that takes you to Brahmaloka, that takes you to to this knowledge, the treasure of this knowledge. And so it's interesting to think about it. What does satyam mean? So here it's the first word in this verse. It says satyena labhyah tapasa hesha atma. The second word is tapasa. Now, Shankara uses as tapas. Tapas means austerity. What he focuses on in this verse is nididhyasana. He says nididhyasana, or contemplation, is the greatest tapas because it's a discipline where I sit with myself, you know, and I bring my mind to myself, I hold my mind with myself. That's considered one of the most greatest austerities to do that, because there's such a fruit in it, right? Because in doing that, I'm getting the great reward, the great pala of being with myself, right? He says, as opposed to some very severe austerities, like such austerities as the one that he speaks of. The Chandrayana. The Chandrayana, the austerity where I eat according to the phases of the moon, where I'll spend 15 days eating less and less and less and less, and then 15 days eating more and more and more and more, you know, going from full meal to nothing in over a 15-day period, and then back again. That's one austerity. There's many austerities like that that give you discipline, right? And a lot of them are used. They have the pala, promised pala, Vedic pala, of removing papas and destroying sin. You know, it's like you do austerities for, as prayaschitta karmas, to get rid of sin, to burn papas, to burn out sin, like that. But this tapas, where I actually sit with myself, right, gives the mind that the reward of my own being, and also gives the mind practice in what we call ekagrata, being able to hold myself steady. Right? But now it's holding myself steady, holding the mind steady around the source of ananda. So it's a great fruit. Right? If I hold my mind, if I learn how to hold my mind steady in what actually is the source of ananda, then it's not a once-removed tapas. So Shankara talks about this. When Swamiji talks about tapas in his bhasha, he's talking about karma yoga as the tapas of karma yoga, where he's looking at satyam, the word satya, telling the truth, as standing for living an ethical life, but tapas as living a religious life. And so he looks at tapas as karma yoga, where all of my activities are done keeping the Lord in view, and where I take all of the results of my action as prasad from the Lord. So he's looking here at tapas as that karma yoga buddhi, because the karma yoga buddhi is what gives the mind, and the mind that's engaged in this world, what gives that mind shanti, right? How to be engaged in the world and keep, and at the same time, by receiving all of the results of my actions as though I'm receiving prasad from the temple, from the Lord in the temple. By keeping that attitude, right? We went over this a lot on Thursday. By keeping that attitude, my mind, in spite of getting my way and not getting my way, it remains the same. Because no matter what the result of the action, it's received as prasadam from the Lord. That prasada buddhi keeps me in continual relationship with Ishvara. So it's really an Ishvara buddhi. You can call it prasada buddhi, karma yoga buddhi, Ishvara buddhi. You know, Ishvara buddhi, where I see my whole engagement with everything in this world is an engagement with Ishvara. In fact, the whole order of the universe, all of the laws, dharma, adharma, they're all Ishvara's order. And so I'm continually a student. Ishvara is continually my mentor, right? Because every karmapala, everything that I experience in my psyche, all sukha and dukkha, is simply for my learning. You know? It's all, if I look at it that way, if I look at it as a classroom situation, you know, where every time I experience tension or dukkha, that's my classroom situation. That's, and Ishwara is my teacher. And here it is, you know, it's, you know, in psychology, when we are working with our clients, that the therapist and the client are involved in a, in the hour that they're spending, we always consider what makes that hour really valuable is when the emotions and the feelings are in the room, not being talked third person. Oh, so-and-so did such and such to me, and it was, it hurt my feelings, I'm so angry with, you know. It's all third person about something that happened yesterday. It's once removed, as opposed to when you're in the room, the two of you are in the room, and the client is saying, how could you do that to me? How could you do that? I feel so angry at you. Whatever it may be, or I'm so happy about it. Whatever it may be, it is happening here in the room. And so you're there, it's live, it's real. You can deal with it. You can actually work with it and come to some sort of being with that particular problem. Well, that's what karma yoga, we're in the room, right? It's in the room, it is here and now. So when you have, just think of that, it's so true. If I was a therapist, you'll maybe understand this more, or if you've been in therapy. Whenever you, as a karmapala, right, the fruits of the actions are coming, something happens in you like a big reaction. You're hurt, or you're angry, or you feel uncomfortable, or you feel something. This is it. This is the classroom then. What is that? What has just happened? Why am I feeling this way? What attitude inside of me? This is, you know, for people who have knowledge. Karma yoga is for people who have knowledge, who are mumukshus, who are learning. What attitude in me would dissipate that pain? What would it take? What is the attitude that would free me of that pain? It's really a beautiful meditation, you know. Because in reality, it's a beautiful way to sit with yourself. Because in reality, Atma is not in pain. Absolutely not. Yourself is fine. It is absolutely fine. Another reality is your mind, right? Which sometimes is happy and sometimes is sad, is never away from the Atma, which is the source of the ananda which it enjoys. No one is taking the self away from you. No one. No one can. You are the self, and the mind can't exist without that self. So it's impossible, right? There's no mind. You can't take the mind away from the self and put it somewhere else. And so there's no part of the mind at any time that is ever in any way removed or away from the self. So, in reality, in the Ishwara Srishti, in Ishwara's creation, there is no problem. There is no problem. So that means there's something here to learn. There's something here to learn. Where is the problem? So it's a wonderful understanding to have the freedom now to figure out what that problem is. Now look, one thing, when I was reading Swamiji's Bhasha, I thought, wow, there's some things in here that are fabulous. One thing he said was that, you know, you can never, as much as you may try, as saintly as you may be, you can never make things right with everybody. It's not possible. You can't make everybody like you. You can't make everybody think that you're a good person, you know. You can't make all of the world realize that this person here is really okay. You can't do it. You can't make things right with everybody. Some people will like you, some won't like you. That's how it is, you know. So, you can't make things right with everybody, every individual, but you can make things right with Ishvara. You know, you can, by that what he means, you can come to terms with Ishvara in terms of this is this creation is Ishvara. And that Karma Yoga Buddhi allows me to relate to this creation, to Ishvara, in a particular way. But in order to really make things all right with Ishvara, me to make me all right with Ishvara, to make me come to terms with Ishvara, right? To bring myself into alignment, to come to terms with Ishvara, really, at the end of it all, I have to recognize a couple of things. First, even Ishvara can't hurt me. Even Ishvara can't hurt me. Because myself can't be changed. That's one reason. Myself, that's the main reason. Ishvara can't hurt himself. How's that? Even Ishvara can't hurt himself. Because the self that is Ishvara is myself, and so Ishvara's self can't be changed either. So in this creation, which certainly has its ups and downs, even Ishvara can't hurt himself. If Ishvara can't hurt himself, he also can't hurt me. Right? It's one thing. And then again, because myself is changeless, and there is no distance between my mind and myself, then my ananda, or my whole being from the standpoint of my swarupa ananda, is immutable. And from the standpoint of my mind's ananda, it has only to do with attitude. It has only to do with attitude. It doesn't have to do with anything else. Because there's no distance between myself and my mind. And the source of the ananda is me. So swarupa ananda, my own being, nothing can touch it. The ananda reflected in the mind has only to do with attitude. Look at it. If I say, and this is where coming to terms with Ishvara comes in. You know, this is Swamiji's working on this tapasa. If my mind says, I need this to be happy, then it's a samsari. Then it may be happy or may not be happy. It depends on whether it gets that or not. If it says, I've got to get rid of this to be happy, samsari. It's going to be tense if things don't work out. If it says to Ishvara, Ishvara, I need you to be like this in order for me to be happy, sorry. You know, things aren't always going to work out. If I'm asking the creation to be like this, and it isn't like the way I'm asking it, then I'm going to be tense. But what if my mind is not asking the creation to be in a particular way? What if my mind is appreciating the creation as Ishvara, and has the freedom to appreciate the creation as Ishvara, because my mind is enjoying the ananda which is immutable. Right? If I'm enjoying the ananda which is immutable, or the self that nothing can happen to, right, then I am free to appreciate the creation as Ishvara. And that allows my mind the great shanti. So here, satyena nityam. Always be honest. Tapasa nityam. Always have this karma yoga buddhi. Come to terms with Ishvara. Right? So that the mind can enjoy the self. Then it says, brahmacharyena. Shankara takes this term, brahmachari, as celibacy. Don't get involved in sex. Sometimes brahmacharya is used this way, celibacy. Don't be sexually engaged. You have to understand the the point of it. There is no stronger desire, probably, than that sexuality, sexual desire. There's nothing that pulls a person's shanti more away than their sexual relationships. And so that particular sexuality, or the desire, the passion born of sexuality, is used as the big example, you know, as the Muhammad Ali example. If you can conquer that passion, be free of that passion where it doesn't pull you, you know, it doesn't pull you away, it doesn't make you lose yourself, then all of the other passions are simple. So it's using this kind of Muhammad Ali desire, saying that if you can control that, you know, in whatever way, if you're married and living a life with your partner, you have sexuality, but you don't go running around with a whole bunch of other people. You're controlling it. You control that. You control your passion. Or as a sadhu, as a sannyasi, you pull that back, along with all the other passions, right? And so that gives the mind shanti, because desire, you know, relationship is desire. Desire gets you into trouble, right? I want this so I could be happy. And sexuality is a very strong model for that. And the control of sexuality is a very strong model for that. And so often when you're reading these Upanishads, that are really meant for sannyasis, that are, you know, living a celibate life, they say, pull back all of these, you know. But brahmacharya also has another meaning that Swamiji is focusing on, which is live with your teacher, or spend time with your teacher, spend time studying in the company of your teacher, because your teacher is somebody who has accomplished all this, at least to a greater degree than you have. You know? And so the teacher becomes a role model. That's why in these three-year courses and whatnot, these times where you can go and you can actually live with your teacher, you know, you learn so much because the teacher's mind is already sitting with the self and already has a certain level of shanti. It doesn't get pulled out to this, that, or the other thing. And so you watch how the teacher handles this situation and that situation and this situation. You learn from that. So brahmacharya, in the old days, the students would go to the teacher and live with the teacher and learn from the teacher. And then they would be set free once they knew. They would go and they would stay with the teacher. So, and that's a brahmacharya. The brahmacharya goes and lives with the teacher. So Swamiji has used that example. Because also this teaching now is not just being given to sannyasis, people who are renunciates, who are given up all these things. In the Bhagavad Gita, for instance, so many of us are householders, we're living a life in the world, where celibacy is not the issue, you know, but being able to hold your, because you're not celibate, because you have relationships, because you're in the world, right? And so it's not a matter now of all of a sudden saying, sorry, honey, you know. And it's not realistic, and it's not right either, you know? But it's understanding the spirit of it, you know, how to hold your passions, how to hold your mind, how to be with yourself, how to not get lost in the samsara, how to bring your mind back to yourself, you know, how to not let your mind just run wild after this or that or this or that. How to actually pull it back and have it be with yourself. Why would you even bother to do that? Because you're a mamukshu. Why are you a mamukshu? Because you have viveka. Because you've recognized the anityatvam, the non-eternality of everything. You realize it doesn't work. What has that caused? A certain degree of vairagya. And so now your mind is willing to sit in this reality and think it through, you know. To actually think it through, to do the manana, you know. And to to help your mind, to teach your mind, you know, to train your mind in the light of what you know. And as though it were a child, you know. You keep training it and teaching it in the light of what you know so that it can come to live and understand and then just simply abide with myself. It takes some time. And so that's why in this verse it's not just saying, samyak jnanam. It's not just saying this atma is gained through clarity of knowledge, shravana manana nididhyasana. Saying no, you also need these sadhanas to help the mind have the shanti that's necessary to be able to just simply abide and hold this knowledge. And he said, with that, then what? Antasharire, it's inside this body, this jyotirmayaha, this pure consciousness, that which is pure light, which is shubraha, completely pure, completely free of any type of ajnanam. The yetis, the sages, the ones who have made this proper effort, kshina doshaha, for whom all of these impurities born of ajnanam, for the people for whom all of that has gone away, what do? They see this me, this atma. They see this atma, right? Yam pashanti. They see this atma, which is jyotirmayaha, just pure consciousness, free of shubraha, absolutely pure. That mind just sits there, right? Sits with the self, recognizes my being as pure consciousness. So this, the next verse continues on with this a little bit more. And we'll see. Let's stop here. Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.